This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with David Randall. His new book is The Monster's Bones. This is the search for T-Rex. It is now 1873, and a child is born in Carbondale, Kansas. He is given an unusual name, however, by his older brother. David, how is it that an older brother gets to name a younger brother? Have you ever had that experience?
No, and as a younger brother, I'm glad I didn't. But so this was a time where the Barnums, they were, the Browns, they were relatively prosperous. They're still farmers, though, so they're not rich by the standards of a city. And they take their six-year-old son, Frank, up to the big city of Topeka, and they go to P.T. Barnum's Great Traveling World's Fair. And, you know, this is a six-year-old. He can't get this out of his mind. It's the most amazing thing he's ever seen in Kansas. So 6 weeks later, his younger brother is born. And his parents couldn't decide on a name right away. They'd already named both their older daughters after family, so that seemed to close that avenue. So Frank bursts in and yells, "Let's call him Barnum." And, you know, his parents, they thought there, and they looked to each other, and it didn't seem like it fit the showmanship of P.T. Barnum and the flatlands of Kansas, but for some reason it stuck. And suddenly you had Barnum Brown ready to face the world.
Barnum Brown is in Osage County, and the Carbondale is a piece of farmland that is ribboned, I imagine it, with coal deposits that come to the surface. This will later be a source of revenue for his father. It also reminded me of the Citizen Kane Rosewood moment, when the mystery is never solved about Rosewood on the lips of our dying hero or protagonist. Barnum Brown takes that imagination of the surface of another world rising into his. At 16, he's exhausted the schooling in his hometown, and his parents resolve to send him to the University of Kansas, or the early days of Kansas University in Lawrence. But before that, he takes a trip with his father. Where do they go, David?
So they go all the way to the edge of the Rockies. It's about a 2,000-mile trip overall. And Barnum later says this is the greatest gift his father ever gave to him. It was of himself. It was just the two of them. So they go through what was now, you know, what is now Yellowstone National Park. They go through what are now Indian reservations. And Barnum really, this is the first time he's ever gone more than 20 miles from his house. And this is the real, his real introduction to the world. And for his father, this is meaningful because his father, before he was farming, he used to haul things for the U.S. Army over long distances. So he starts to see how the West is changing. You know, the introduction of barbed wire, there are fewer buffalo around. And he tells Barnum of what the world used to be like and within his own lifespan and how suddenly it's changed. And that gives Barnum this idea of how quickly things can change and how the earth as you see it now is not the earth as it has always been.
He arrives at the University of Kansas. The year I have is 94, 95, and he meets a professor named Williston. What do we need to know about Williston as a stepping stone for Barnum on his way to the T-Rex?
So Williston, in some, as many ways, has the same background as Brown. The difference is that he's a generation older. So he has been in the world of paleontology longer. And he was there for the front row seat of the Bone Wars. And this was the time when it was two professors, Marsh and Cope, and they fought each other, essentially, not physically, but with words and almost physically, to find as many bones and dinosaurs as possible. And this was the first big explosion of dinosaurs into popular culture. This is when we find so many of the dinosaurs that are now familiar, like the Brontosaurus, the Stegosaurus, the Triceratops. And they're the first ones who really revealed to the world how abundant fossil life is in North America.
The search for bones, however, is chaotic. People grab bones and they're not quite sure what they are. And I've spoken with paleontologists in the 21st century, and they're very upset that they didn't keep notes as to where they found them or didn't take photographs. There's just this pile of bones in museum basements now that they can't attach to epochs or bones. But these are early days. They're learning protocols. So we need to go back out again with Professor Williston. Brown goes along, and he's extremely useful. Because why? Because he cooks? Is he a good cook, David? Do we know?
So there's many things. He is a good cook. And this is in part from the lessons he learned from that trip with his dad. He knows how to survive in lots of different environments. He knows how to both survive and cook, and also to make things fun. And that's a very important skill in lots of ways. But then Brown starts to distinguish himself in the field as well. He's very strong. He has a lean frame, but he's very strong. You know, Wilson says he can walk 30, 35 miles a day without complaint. And on top of that, he's also very patient, which is a key attribute in paleontology. So much of paleontology is mind-numbingly repetitive. You're searching for something that's not there. And then when you finally find something, you get so excited, you just want to rip it out of the earth. Having that patience to say, I can take my time and pull this out slowly and not, you know, dig but not destroy, is a very strong attribute. Williston even leans on Brown when he finds something, because he says he knows that Brown is going to be able to have the time and skill to take this out without destroying it. And soon Brown is able to walk through fields that other people have picked over and come out with fossils that nobody had ever seen. And he starts to get the nickname Mr. Bones.
Mr. Bones is in a fertile area right now. I believe they first go to Colorado. I'm not sure. No, Wyoming. They go to Wyoming. Because what we know of where you find bones in the American West, Montana, they were feeling their way through this vast canvas they're working on. And Barnum Brown is so successful on these two expeditions that he accompanies Professor Williston that there is a recommendation to join, to go to New York. Who sends the invitation? How does that happen, David?
So that's when Henry Fairfield Osborne sends the letter to Williston saying, I need somebody new for my crew for the American Museum. He suggested somebody else. Williston writes back and says, you know, the person you're thinking of is a very nice person, but he's a total failure in the field. If you really want somebody who's good, you should go with Brown. So this opens up Brown to an entirely new world that had never really been on his radar. He'd never been east of the Mississippi. He's never seen a skyscraper. He's never really thought of himself in the world of New York. And it really is taking him into a completely different environment.
Right. This is the summer of 1897 now, as Barnum Brown arrives in Manhattan to meet Henry Osborne. We need to explicate Henry Osborne's passion for bones. It can be as cynical as he needs eyeballs at the museum, and it can be as simple as that he wants to prove himself to his father and to his family. At the same time, however, there are moments in their relationship where Osborne gets caught up in the search himself. You've seen the original stories about Osborne. Was he skilled in talking about bones, about dinosaurs? Did he have all that ready-made material to discuss with his donors?
He did. He reached a level of achievement expertise in paleontology. It took a while, though. He was not somebody who naturally fell into paleontology like Brown. He didn't have something that animating spirit from the get-go. In many ways, he was searching for a way to prove himself, and paleontology filled that hole in many ways. And then he worked incredibly hard once he was in that field. And he enjoyed the position of being a director. He saw this as a way to prove himself to his father, to live up to his family name. And he liked the idea that, you know, dinosaurs were at the cutting edge of science at this time. And if he rose to the top of American paleontology, he was going to be one of the most influential scientists in the world.
Before Brown goes back out there, we need to mention the love of his life, Marion Raymond, who is also taking graduate courses at Columbia, and she lives nearby him, I believe in the same rooming house or near too. And he clearly falls in love, but Osborne doesn't have time for romance. He wants Brown to get out there again, and he sends Brown to Patagonia, a wonderful field, but really it isn't until now, the 21st century, we're starting to work South America. That was visionary on their part. But they weren't looking in the right place. We're seeing more and more completely new species come out of South America now as they explore paleontology. We're going to go searching for the T-Rex in North America. The book is The Monster's Bones, The Discovery of T-Rex and How It Shook Our World. We have our protagonist, Barnum Brown. It's a search for the treasure of the Sierra Madre. In this case, of course, it's going to take us to Hell Creek when we come back. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.